It's really weird. Really weird thing happening right now. We're recording. And there is somebody here who's not been here in a long time.
Some mullet-wearing fella.
Mustache. Man. Juan.
Juan! It's Don happen. Juan. The Juan and only.
Cheers.
Welcome.
Cheers.
We are not. We do not have Jim, but in his stead,
yes,
we do have Rick, who is one of our friends from church.
Yes, Rick from church. That's all.
Rick
that's
from church.
That's all we're going to use label him as. We'll say Rick from church. A good friend of ours.
Welcome, Rick from church.
Yeah. Rick, did not plan on saying this or even tell you I was going to say this ahead of time, but really appreciate having your family there. Love having your family at church. Love having that your decorum for your family.
I was also going to say
on par. Like, I love it. It's like, yes, another, like the first time you came to our church and I saw your family there and I saw like you guys all proper, I was like, yes, one of my homeboys. Like, I didn't even know you yet, but I was just like, one of my people. So I'm grateful for you, grateful for everything you do at our church.
Yeah, like if there's a new family who shows up and like the guy's wearing a suit, it's like, I don't know who that is,
but
I'm going to talk to that man.
Did we just become best friends?
Yeah, like afterwards.
Probably so, yes. I hope he eats donuts because then it's a sealed deal.
Yes, please like donuts and yeah. Coffee.
So it's great to have you here. Yeah, I'm glad you're here.
We should just say, you should wear a suit to church.
If you can.
If you have a suit, you should wear a suit to church. I mean, like, the Sunday is a day for wearing your nice things. And like, wearing a suit to church is part of culture. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of the things that develops a robust culture it's one way of, like, why is Sunday different?
Right. It's sacred, right?
To yes, set exactly. apart. It makes things sacred by having clothes. It's like, oh, you know, you might wear your suit other times too, but you know.
Right. I mean, obviously we want you there. The first most important thing is we want you in the church. The church is much better with you in it. So we want you there.
Right.
The second thing is, out of justice to our Lord, to render
what is
due.
If you've got the being there part down, you can start working on the, like, what you wear.
Yeah, the decorum. Mm-hmm. Juan, it is great to have you here. I'm also a little upset with you. Nothing for what you have done, but just what some listener said. He wrote a review of our show recently. Don't remember where. Don't go look it up because I don't want it to gain any traction.
Which is why we're going to say it on the show.
But but it said, Adam and Dave, you're great, but where the heck is Juan? He's way better. Mm. So...
Actually, I wrote that.
Yeah. Juan's like, it's actually my profile.
Started an iTunes account under the name Richard.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're showing up in a very stereotypical fashion.
Poncho. What?
Ruana.
Whatever it is, it looks like a poncho to me. But it's a donkey hair poncho.
Open.
It's a poncho.
Is it donkey hair?
No, that one is bulletproof.
What is this? Just like regular textiles.
Wool.
Yeah.
All right.
It's good to have you on here, though. It's good to have you back. So those who are listening to the Catholic Man Show currently, we have already passed Ash Wednesday. And so my question to you, Dave, is how did you prepare your children for, like, them going into Lent? Like, what? Because obviously you have children the age of reason, mm-hmm. you know, who have received the sacraments. And so, like, by church authority, you know, the church has said, like, they are in need of doing things during Lent, mm-hmm. right? And then you have children that are not. So how did you navigate that? What did you do? What did you say? How did you prep them?
Okay, well, let me start off by saying doing Exodus 90 is helpful because they know, they see me doing things, you know, they know on Wednesdays and Fridays when I'm not eating that. So there's already kind of, they see me in this role. Phase, right? And that, I think, prepares them. just seeing me do things.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we go to church on Ash Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
which is a really important way.
You know what I found out a couple years ago that blew me away?
That it's not
Yeah, it's not a day of obligation.
That is correct.
It's like a couple years ago, if you would ask me, I'd have been like, of course it is.
Yeah, I don't know what percentage, but a big percentage of Catholics think that it is.
I'm super pumped.
It's also
though.
One of the highest attended days.
Yeah, I know, but I'm also super pumped because it's like, good. It's great. The church is much better with everybody in it.
Yeah.
So, I always look forward to, like, people sometimes knock on the Christmas, Easter Catholics, you know, things like that. And it's like, I actually am more like, yes, I'm so pumped they're there. This is an opportunity to witness. Not that I'm going to be beating them over the head with the Bible or anything like that. That would be very weird and they would not come back. But I do get excited to see the church full, to see other families there, to be able to just talk to people that I haven't had a chance to talk to.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ash Wednesday, we also invited our kids invited their dance teacher to come.
Is she coming?
No.
Oh. Well, that's okay. It was a great, but they great
did,
invite.
Yeah, they did invite.
You don't
and
always...
she said, you know what? She appreciated being invited. She said she wasn't able to come, but she said, don't let that discourage you from inviting me again.
See?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It was. It was great. And it was all because our pastor
asked us to invite people.
Yeah, told us last Sunday. Hey,
Father Brian Brooks is pretty awesome.
He said, I want you to invite people.
Right.
Bring people. Yeah. And I was so proud of him because he didn't say, it would be so great if everybody invited somebody.
Right. It was much more stern. It was like,
hey, you will invite somebody.
I expect you to.
Now, I expect you to. And I was like, yes. Like the call to duty.
The fatherly role.
Yes.
It's the fatherly role.
I can rise to this expectation. This yes.
Because you don't have to be Catholic to get the ashes.
Anybody right? can get ashes.
Anybody can get ashes.
So yeah. It's a good time to us. Like, if you like to go there to the front,
yeah.
do something, now is the time.
Yeah. yeah. I'm bringing all of my livestock. We're all getting ashes.
Well, that's not true.
That's not true. You're right.
Yeah. So how did you prepare your kids?
Well,
you didn't answer the question.
So I was in the midst of answering it and got distracted.
Shocker.
So doing those things, you know, seeing me, and then we talked to them about what they want to do for giving up. As a family, we're doing things. They're going to do individual things. There's no dessert during Lent.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also, my wife and I are going to really lean into a daily family rosary. I don't expect that we will do it every day, but this is, you know, something I like to look at Lent as an opportunity, as a good excuse almost for me to, what's a habit I wish I had? And so I try to do that in Lent with the expectation of when Lent's over, I'm just not going to stop. I'm just going to keep going. And that has worked for me. There are many things I still do today.
Yeah.
Because I started doing them in Lent. And you just kept going.
You read the readings every day.
Yeah.
And you started that during Lent.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Years ago.
That was one thing.
Yeah. And you're like, just like Kansas, carry on, my wayward son.
Just carry on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's what we did. What about you?
Yeah, so one of the evenings we sat down.
I kind of thought you were going to say nothing.
Nothing. No, I was hoping.
No, that's why I asked you, bro.
That's why I asked you, because I didn't do anything, and I was going to just steal.
We really didn't. We had no idea what to do.
It really snuck up on me.
It can
happen. But one thing, again, with Exodus 90 is that fasting and abstinence is just kind of like on your mind a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're just a little bit more aware of what's going on around. Like
I find that your kids are
calendar.
A lot more willing and excited to do penance.
Well, you know,
when they see you doing penance all the time.
Well, you know, Luke is doing Exodus 90 with me again this year.
Yeah, I did not. I learned my lesson last year not to offer him $100 if he could take cold showers for 90 days.
So, okay, so.
Because that cost me $100.
$100, yeah. So he did caveat, he's not doing the cold showers this year.
Yeah.
But he's doing he's doing everything else.
I would love to caveat.
He's not drinking for a full 90 days.
He's giving no alcohol.
No alcohol for a full 90 days.
Man, that has to be tough.
It's going
to
be tough for him. You know what's funny, though? So I just got back from San Francisco last weekend giving some talks. Guy there who is listening listens to the Catholic Man Show. And he says, like, it is burned in his memory. Brian is his name. I really enjoyed talking to him. It was burned into his memory that of me telling the story of Luke going into the cold showers and yelling like $100, you know, just to try to get through it. And so, yeah. So anyway, so he's not,
what did he do with the hundred? Do you know?
He bought fishing lures.
Okay.
Yeah. He bought a bunch of fishing lures.
A manly pursuit.
Yeah. I think he bought fishing line, fishing lures, and one of his,
dude, you can fishing lures. No. You can lose $100 fast, yeah, buying fishing lures.
Oh, I thought
lures.
You were going to say you could buy so many of them. Like, no, dude,
no.
Fishing lures.
No,
are
you could
expensive.
Maybe like get seven.
Well,
I mean, depends on the ones you get. You can get cheaper ones, but some of those like good lures, they're like $10 each sometimes. Yeah.
$30 is some of them. I mean, $30, $50 is some of them.
I would never buy a $50 lure.
I wouldn't even allow him to do that. Anyway, so he's still doing Exodus 90 with me, so he's just carrying that on. But I did sit down at dinner the other night and said, like, hey, guys, you know, Lent is coming up. Ash Wednesday is coming up. Luke, Jude, Anna, she's going to be confirmed. And you know, received First Holy Communion reconciliation. So I said, like, you're going to do it this year. You're of age.
Yeah.
And so really we asked them all to really consider it. And then a couple of days later, we had them tell us what they're going to be doing. Leo, who's my 5-year-old, is giving up all shows, all TV, everything like that, which I find very impressive. Not that we watch TV very much, but it's like his treat for doing all of his chores.
Mm.
Men, do you feel stuck in old idols or burdened by the pharaohs of our time? Do you know that you're capable of so much more than you are giving today? Exodus 90 is the number one freedom app to help you become the man you were created to be. Exodus 90 is a powerful 90-day journey to freedom in Jesus Christ. Download the Exodus 90 app today to join tens of thousands of men from all around the world. We begin January 20th. Join us.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. Special guest, Rick from church, and Juan Posada.
Dude, Rick, sometime you need to like open up a Twitter account or an X account and just be like, Rick from church. And you will have at least 3 followers.
Dude,
for sure.
Dude, I can guarantee you at least 3. Yeah. Well, actually, I guess I can only guarantee you 1. I'll follow you. That's all I can really do. Can I play? Yeah.
Yes,
I don't know. How much does it cost?
$7.99 a month or $8.99 a month, something like that.
What does that buy you?
Oh, I don't want to get into that.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. So I want to tell you a story that happened to me this week. It's a story about trusting in the Lord.
Ooh, much better of a story.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be the judge.
So on Saturday, my wife came to me and said, the washer isn't working. And I just fixed this washer a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
The water valve went bad, and it was it wouldn't stop filling when you turned it on.
Dude, we just had this issue, and I was not magnanimous, and decided to take the easy way out. But it was very costly. We got a Speed Queen.
Dude, I was going to... Speed Queen is part of my story.
Okay, I'll let you keep going. I'm sorry.
Because I asked a buddy of mine who's into appliances. He's like, I said, do you have a recommendation? He's like, yes, absolutely. You have to get a Speed Queen.
That's it, yeah.
And I was like, cool. That sounds like a cheap brand to me. And apparently this is the best one. Speed Queen doesn't... Yeah. No, turns out it's like...
That's the
it's like $2,000 for just the washer.
Yeah, and there's no... It's like the reason why it's so expensive... No electronics. It's like there's not any of the fancy stuff. And
yeah,
there's this
they
tumbler
do have,
thing.
They do
in
have
the
some that like they do have a front loader. They do have a front load washer.
Oh well, this is one of them. So I walked into I know this is your story. Let me take over.
Sure.
I was walking into Hans Appliances where you get
just
the,
you know like
well Haley sent me just there. She said like, hey, I need you to go get a washer. This is the washer that we want. It was actually the best way to shop. This is how she knew. How to sell this, because you know I did not want to go in there and
Shop around,
try to figure out what the heck we wanted, try to figure out what she wanted.
Yeah, because that's really what it is. What does she want?
Right. And so she sent me in with, here is the exact specs of the one that I want. I said, I walked in to the guy and I said, do you have this one? He says, I have that one. I said, can you get me a better deal on this one? And he said, yes. And I said, wrap it up, I'm ready to go. And he goes, go over to pay at the counter. And I said, perfect. I walk over there. I did not realize how much it was. I did not even look at the washer ahead of time because I don't care. I don't care what it looks like.
This is what I was told to do.
This is what I want. This is what she wants. This is what we're going to get. So I walk over there. He shows me the price. I realized what I was stepping into at that moment. And I said, oh, this is not a good day. And he goes, well, if you have this kind of money to blow on a washer, it must be a pretty good day.
As if you're just blowing money on a washer. And it's like, what are you doing? Just blowing money on washers. Yeah. This is my fourth one.
Yeah. And I realized,
I figured we'd get one in every bedroom.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead. But that's my washer story. It happened very recently.
Okay. Well, so
Speed. We're not sponsored by Speed Queen.
I asked this buddy of mine. It's like, yes, absolutely, get a Speed Queen.
Shelton is my friend, not yours.
Okay. We'll talk about that later. As if he can only have. There can only be one Highlander. So like, I started looking at these Speed Queens. Like, one of them was like $2,200.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like realizing, you know, sure, these other ones might break after a while, but like I could buy four of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't know. Like, I might roll the dice on four. And then my washer right now, it's like 15 years old. It's,
right.
You know, yeah. So anyway, I was like stressing out. It's like, great. I wasn't budgeting for $2,000. And it's like, if I'm going to buy the washer, go ahead and you have to just, the dryer is also 15 years old, you know? I was like, you know what? I just told the Lord, Jesus, I trust in you. I just know that whatever it is, like, you're either going to provide the way.
You've washed, like, my sins away. You can help me wash my clothes.
That's like, right.
Yeah.
That's right. Like, if I need to spend all this money, then you'll help me with the money.
Yeah.
And if not, you'll show me what the other way is. And it's like, it's going to be fine. I don't even need to worry about this. You got this. We got home from church. The washer just works now. It totally just started working.
He said, I got you, bro.
And I had looked it up. It was like this E53 error. It means that the motor has gone out. Okay. Like that it wasn't spinning. And the motor was just totally blown. And
it is not blown anymore.
Now the Lord, while we were at mass, the Lord is like, hey, I'm going to send somebody. Like, we're going to fix this motor for you.
You were blind and now you can see.
You put your trust in me. I never let you down.
The motor was blown and now it works.
Yeah. Because you trusted in me, bro. I'm going to give you at least another 4 weeks out of this washer. That might be, still might break.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But for the moment.
You're definitely on borrowed time.
For the moment, it is working flawlessly. That's no worse than it was 3 weeks ago.
You know what? When Haley showed me that and I realized what I was getting myself into in a Speed Queen.
You have a Speed Queen? That's hilarious.
Yeah, we have one.
I want to know if Shelton's getting kickbacks.
I don't know. But I looked up on Facebook Market one of those washing boards on Marketplace. Turns out, like, those go for like $20 a board.
Yeah.
And I sent that
Babe
over.
Babe got a lower cost option for you.
I sent that over to her. I got no reply. But
you are so much bolder than I am when it comes to your intermarital communications. I'm really proud of you. I'm really
you know what?
Proud
okay,
of you.
Okay, so I do have to come clean on something else really fast.
Since we're airing our dirty laundry here.
Yeah. So last week on our episode, you know, we were talking about chickens. We, like, for half an episode, we were talking about chickens.
Yeah, we talked a lot about chickens.
Oh, yeah.
You would have loved it, one. You would have had a lot to contribute, actually.
Yeah, and in fact, you would have been able to probably correct me because apparently, here's you know, I was talking to you about the incubator and like how easy it was. You just put the legs in, you put the humidity, it makes the humidity go, and keep the thing plugged in, and it works out. Haley texted me. She listened to our episode.
I think you have to, like, rotate them every day.
She was very adamant that I did not know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
And turns out, I think she's right, because I was not part of the process. I was just watching. At times, I was watching.
Yeah. This is very, this feels very much like fatherhood. Like, oh yeah, you just feed the baby. I mean, it's super easy.
Yeah.
She just, she doesn't have to do anything.
Right.
Her body just.
Some guy out there was hearing you and doing it. Just
yeah.
Like
she was, she was concerned that I was, you know, out of truth and charity. She wanted to make sure.
Well,
that
I even made the comment like, wow, I thought it was a lot harder than that.
Yeah. And I was like, no, I doubled down. You said that, and I said, I doubled down. I was like, no, bro. It's like, it's pretty.
It's super easy.
There's like a bottle of water that you keep distilled water in.
The machine does everything. I think you have to rotate the eggs, right?
I, you know what? Here's how terrible of a husband I am. She corrected me, and I just gave in.
Overwhelmed.
I didn't even
overwhelmed by the error.
I did not even say like, oh, tell me why.
Mm.
I just accepted it, and I said, like, you know what?
You have to rotate the eggs.
So
when you have a broody hen, she rotates the eggs like 7 times a day.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's all of them. A broody hen, like, she just takes care of everything.
Yeah, I'm not watching him that much.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway.
or doing any of the stuff.
Right, yeah.
This seems to be so easy.
Yeah, so... Anyway, I just wanted to make that clear.
Might be worth it. Still worth it, though, because having a broody hen, most people don't have one, you know? So.
Yeah, but Haley did a great job with that.
Excellent.
All of our chickens are still alive, too.
It would have been great. I would have enjoyed being there just to watch. Her
tell me that?
Go through all that stuff with you. I would have laughed. I've been over there quietly laughing.
Yeah, I was too.
No. Yeah.
I was realizing that I didn't know what I was talking about.
Very good.
Anyway, what are we sipping on tonight? We're sipping on some whiskey.
Yeah, we're sipping on some whiskey that you brought, and we don't need to say what it's called because you thought it was called something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I was when you brought it over the other day, I was like, I don't think I would have bought this based on the name. And you're like, what do you mean? And I was like, well,
I was very dumbstruck.
Yeah, you thought it said Dark Ages. It doesn't say Dark Ages.
Right.
And it has like a monk on it, so...
Or what appears to be a monk.
What appears to be a monk. Actually, he could be like...
I think he's like a pagan sorcerer. Priest or something. Or
yeah,
a sorcerer,
or he could be like mixing up a potion or something.
Alchemist, maybe?
Yes, an alchemist. That's a good word. Hey, good word, bro.
Thank you.
Anyway, it was just very funny. So we're drinking. It's a bourbon. It's delicious, actually.
It is very good. I just don't want to promote it because... it could have pagan like overtones, and that's not something
that's not what we do on the Catholic Man Show.
Not interested in that.
Even though we are drinking the product,
I had already bought it.
We bought it already.
So,
and it's actually really good.
It's got a good afterbirth.
So,
if you have something like this, put it in a decanter.
That's right.
Get rid
of the bottle. Yeah, get rid of the bottle.
Have your priest bless it.
Make sure.
Should be fine.
Yeah. So. Everything else going well?
Everything is good. Everything is good. I have nothing to report. I have no more dead chickens as of late. The wheat is great. Hey, is your wheat growing?
Not really, no.
It's not starting to grow? Ours is starting to grow.
We had a crazy amount of rain, though, so I'm assuming that that's going to start taking place.
Have you really looked in the last couple days?
Yeah, I was looking at it today, actually.
And it doesn't seem greener?
No.
Hmm. Well, maybe you're just...
Because I had your father-in-law over helping me.
Maybe you're just a bad farmer.
Well, that could be. You know what the difference? You know what the difference in a plot of land and a farm is?
The farmer.
The farmer.
I got it right.
That is the difference.
I've been listening to Wendell Berry lately, so.
Dude, dang it! I should have asked that question because I told you. Do you like those essays?
I do like them. I'm not sure how I feel about some of his stuff.
So
I am like really wrestling with some of his things.
When people ask, like, who's a philosopher that you disagree with but really like?
Yes, that's how I feel.
I agree. I feel that, bro. I feel that.
All right, good. We'll be right back. Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. This evening we're going to talk about magnanimity. We've talked about magnanimity before in a episode. Oh, probably it had to be at least. Bro, don't you think it was before COVID?
Dude.
Most likely.
Don't ask me if something was before COVID.
Yeah.
Okay?
You don't even
know. Too far back. It's too far in the past
to even remember.
For me to know.
Yeah.
When,
but one, you
we
were.
You remember Alex Havard in Phoenix?
Yes.
And he's the one that introduced us to magnanimity, and he talked about it a bunch in the conference. And then we came back and we did an episode on that.
Okay. So that was a long, long time ago. Yeah, yeah. So we did one a long, long time ago. I wanted to revisit it because, one, I think it is a great piggyback off of our last episode talking about honor and things like that.
Yeah, it really is.
So that works out really well. Two, we're going to be giving a talk on this subject here in a couple of weeks in Kansas.
In McPherson.
McPherson. I think it should be McPherson. I know it's not, but like that sounds way cooler.
I agree. It sounds cooler.
But we'll be giving a talk there on this subject. And it's just, honestly, it's a virtue that I don't think that many men know about. And I think many men who could grow in this virtue would change a lot of problems that we have in this world today.
Yeah. It's an interesting virtue. It's sort of a catch-22. Because in order, you know, the virtues are habits, okay? It's one of those things that, like, you have to be magnanimous to do acts of magnanimity. Right?
Well, you have to desire it, at least.
Yes, you have to desire it. But the thing is, just because you aren't magnanimous doesn't mean you can't become magnanimous, even though it's simultaneously true that you can't do acts of magnanimity if you aren't magnanimous. Because there are times when the effect of a thing and the doing of a thing happen at the same time. So Aquinas uses the example of when you lay your head down on a pillow, does the dent that your head makes in the pillow, does that happen before you lay your head down in the pillow? The effect of you laying your head down on the pillow in that dent in the it happens at the same time. Now, at the same time, you can't really lay your head down in the pillow if there's not a dent, right? If, you know, if the pillow is like a rock, you're going to lay your head down, and that's not really laying your head down on a pillow. That's kind of a different thing. You know, it's a different experience. So that dent in the pillow is almost, it's not a prerequisite, but it is a necessary part of the pillow experience. It's similar with magnanimity, where you might do your first act of magnanimity, and you simultaneously become magnanimous at that moment. Is this making sense? The look on your face is saying this is not making sense.
I'm not sure I can disagree because I think I agree.
Okay. I
feel like
hooray!
Like other virtues like generosity and other
virtues that are the same way.
The exact same way.
Magnanimity is just interesting because, unlike generosity or honesty, there are very specific things and governed and like in a very narrow lane.
So magnanimity is like the greatness of soul, right?
Right.
It's the desire, you know, this desire to do great things,
mm-hmm.
Not for honor, not for money or power or wealth, but so that, you know, they say, what do they say? They say that, the gifts that you have are given to you as a gift from God. What you become with those gifts is the gift that you return to God, right? And so it's like it's the execution of the gifts and talents that you've had. You have, like, what does Saint Catherine of Siena say? Like, you know, like if you are made for the man, or the person that you become to be, you will set the world on fire, right? So we're all called, who are, you know, all of us who are baptized, you know, to go and spread the gospel to all corners of the earth, right? And if we took those claims and those actually commands that Jesus has, in fact, the last command that he has before he ascends, you know, into heaven, is to go baptize all nations in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, right? Like, go preach the gospel. And so if we took those seriously and we became the person that our Lord made us to be, that we're exercising those gifts for the greater glory of God, not for fame or glory, or not for vain glory, but to exercise those gifts as a way of saying, for you, Lord.
Yes.
Good. Good. I'm glad you agreed with that.
Correct.
So there's this connection, I think, with magnanimity, which is so it's kind of a sub virtue of fortitude.
Is it to me? Yes. This is also one of those virtues that's kind of all encompassing. Mm. You know, like sort of charity.
So Aquinas actually does say that magnanimity is one that is kind of an all encompassing virtue.
Okay,
but he does say that it's basically a sub virtue of fortitude, because.
Hmm. Okay.
You have to have the courage to do so. You have to have the courage to be able to exercise these gifts that our Lord has given you. You know, so
yeah.
the other side of the spectrum here is sloth, right?
You yes,
know, the vice of this, right?
That's probably an easier way to categorize it, because it does seem hard. Where does magnanimity fit in this, you know, sub virtue, whatever? But it seems more clear that sloth is the opposing vice. And so if you know the opposing vice, it's like, okay, well, what's the opposing virtue? The fortitude. So
I do
think that helps.
So here's a question.
In a categorizing.
Yeah. So here's a question that I have, because Aquinas links like being a hero, like heroism, with magnanimity.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, so there's this book that I'm actually pulling from this evening. It's called Companion to the Summa. It's by Father Walter Farrell. He passed away, I think, in the 30s. But he did a whole, like, basically Companion to the Summa. It's a four-volume set with the Summa. And kind of going through exactly what Aquinas talks about, and kind of extrapolates what he has to say in more of a easier way to read.
Okay.
And so he talks about here how, like, heroism is nothing more than high courage, than, like, doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a hero, right? Mm-hmm. That's the difference between the guy who doesn't do anything versus the guy who says, nope, this is the right thing to do, and steps up at that time to do it.
Yeah, and you know, that also helps, I think, categorize. I'm just, like, still
processing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you're willing, essentially you're laying your life on the line. Like, no, this is where I stand. You know, this is where my feet are firmly planted here. Mm-hmm. You know, if you just kind of think about your own examples of things you might have heard in history or whatever, stories that are magnanimous things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very often it's going to be stuff like, you know, something where this person put their life on the line for fill in the blank. And
yeah,
so that's obviously fortitude.
Yeah, yeah. So it's chiefly found in a supreme act of courage, that is, in facing dangers of death. So it's an integral part of fortitude. So there's four integral parts of fortitude, one being magnanimity, another one being magnificence, which we've talked about as well,
mm-hmm.
Patience and perseverance. Those are the four integral parts of fortitude.
So when I think about magnanimity, I think about kind of two ways of being magnanimous. One of them is, like, doing great things, where the objectively the thing you did was immense, great, right? Where,
so I think the difference here is...
But let me finish.
Okay.
Because this is a question I'm going to ask. I also think about magnanimity as being... doing things that are more ordinary, but with a greatness of purpose.
Okay. Yeah, I like that.
But so, like, even though they might be common everyday things,
mm-hmm.
Do you think that counts as magnanimity?
Okay. So, great question. So, I think that magnanimity implies more of, like, the greatness of heart. So, it's the stretching of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, I think, yeah, so Father Walter Farrell here, he says it's a heart enlarged, reaching out to great things, to things that are difficult precisely because of their greatness. So, one, there has to be an intentionality here, mm-hmm. right? That you desire it. It's this stretching of soul. It's this uncomfort, like,
Uncomfortable?
Yeah, uncomfortable. I was going to say... Yeah.
Uncomfortability?
Yeah. That's actually what I was trying to figure out. Yeah. So it's this uncomfort of, like, realizing that in order to do this great thing, it's going to put me in stress. There's going to be something that is going to make me uncomfortable. But there are things that in everyday life, ordinary life, that occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know about you. So, like, okay, so even discipline. Let's take discipline as we're getting into Lent.
Discipline.
Thank you for correcting me. So discipline, like, the etymology from discipline is disciple,
mm-hmm.
right? So it is like doing the thing to become something else, right? To follow in the footsteps of somebody else.
Yeah.
Right? So it is saying no to self, to say yes to the person in which you're following, namely, obviously as Christians, namely Jesus Christ. So there's going to be some uncomfortness there, comfortability there to be able to shape and form who you are following. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles with Adam Minahan. He's getting very discomfortable with his words.
Mm.
I have some questions about
okay. Yeah, yeah.
About
and I may not have answers.
The operation,
but I'll try.
The logistics.
Okay.
Behind magnanimity.
Yeah, magnanimity.
So if you have, you know, virtue being a habit means that it has to have been practiced, right? You cannot have the habit of doing something you've never done.
This is all accurate thus far.
Okay. So if you have never done a great act, can you be magnanimous? If you've never done something great.
How?
You know, like.
How could that be?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
I think that they're just like.
There are two answers in me okay. that compete against this question.
Okay.
But I want to know what your answer is.
Well, I think that. When you're a child and you achieve something that is considered great for a child, I don't think you can get through life without achieving things that are great in some way, shape, or form from a naturalist perspective.
Okay.
Right. So I don't think like even a child who starts even walking from crawling to walking, that is a natural good. That is, you know, then a child who graduates from first grade to second grade and third grade to fourth, you know, like there's natural progressions here that cause you to do great, like for great things.
Yeah. So the way I think about this is like, on the one hand, yes, the man who has like done something great, you know, it kind of affects him for the rest of his life. You think about the men who have won like the, you know, medals of honor on the battlefield who like ran back in to like through enemy fire to save one of their comrades, you know, totally thinking I'm going to like run down this alley into oncoming fire. I'm probably going to die, but I'm going back for my comrade, you know, and they, it's like that man, he's never the same. Like he always knows he has done something. There's a greatness to him forever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Even if he becomes a drunk later in life, he still has this part of him that's dignity. So on the one hand, you've got like this part of like, because he has done something magnanimous, now he just is magnanimous on some level, okay? Even if he falls in other ways. Okay, so part of me thinks you have to do something magnanimous to be magnanimous. But another part of me says, no, that's not the way it works, because not everybody has these opportunities. But I think that if you live a life predisposed to virtue all the time, that you might not have done anything like incredible in mm-hmm. your life objectively mm-hmm. From like a more beyond the ordinary thing. And there's a lot of ordinary, incredible things.
Right. I mean, like Teresa Lisieux, right?
Like raising a family is incredible.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, a lot of sacrifices.
The extraordinary of the ordinary.
Right. But I mean, in like the textbook way we tend to think about magnanimity.
Sure.
I also think that if you have lived a life where you are simply predisposed to virtue, that you might have the habit, you might actually be habitually predisposed to magnanimity, even though you have never done it.
So I think there's natural inclinations, depending on like the type of person that you are, to be more disposed to for magnanimity to become like an easier, like
certainly
like those who are type A personalities who desire to do great things just from a natural level are more predisposed to the virtue of magnanimity than others.
That's definitely true. But I was just thinking, just to wrap this up, that Aquinas talks about when you grow in one virtue, you grow in simultaneously in all the virtues. So mm-hmm. as you pursue the virtuous life and you're growing these other virtues, you actually are becoming magnanimous. Mm-hmm. Even though you have never actually practiced it.
Well, because living a life of virtue is magnanimous.
That's right.
Yeah, so he does talk about here that there is greatness in every human life, even the smallest and meaningful of human life. So that is there is an aspect of magnanimity in every human life.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something I want to get your take on. I thought this was really cool. So he's describing a man... a magnanimous man. Okay. So he says he's unsociable because there is no need for him to parade his own excellence. He is impractical because he is not producing many results, but big results. He is hard because he's not a whiner, because he is above external things and not to be overcome by them. Sometimes he is too truthful because he has none of the fear that makes a timid man lie. In other words, he has time to live, to think, to act, because he is not overwhelmed with a mass of trifles. His eyes are on big things, and everything else is unimportant to him.
Yeah. It sounds really great.
I mean, to me, it's like poetically, that was like,
yeah. Yeah.
Put that on a poster and put that up on the wall.
Magnanimity is one of the, it's such a challenge, even the way we talk about it, because like what you just said, totally true, beautiful to read. I love
it.
Then how do you square that with your actual life? It can be kind of frustrating, I think, for people. You go back to work on Monday.
Right.
You know, and you're doing a lot of these mundane things.
Right.
And they don't feel great. And maybe they aren't. Like, maybe the things you're called to do in your vocation, like, simply aren't, like, great in, like, this big... They're not bigly.
Right. So, let me ask you what...
You know what I mean?
St. Teresa of Lisieux, like, is she magnanimous?
Oh, absolutely. That's what I'm trying to say is okay. We just have to, I think, talk and think about this the right way. Because when we read stuff like what you just read... which is important to read because it describes it in the most excellent way.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think any of us are actually going to live magnanimous, like magnanimity in the most excellent way. We're all going to actually fall short of what it is. It's, you know, this,
yeah, 'cause we're all this, sinners,
the perfect version of it. But that doesn't mean we don't have it and we're not, you know, doing it. Some, you know, like, are you perfectly honest? Probably not. But are you still striving for honesty? Yeah, you are. And like, hopefully you're progressing in that. It doesn't mean that you possess zero virtue of honesty.
Right.
Okay. And magnanimity is one of those things that is kind of ethereal. It's kind of like, ooh, mysterious. You know, how do you know?
I find it interesting that this is your take.
It makes it seem like unless you're running for president or something, you know, the way we talk about these outwardly great things.
Yeah, no, I mean, to me, it's like, listen, it's like you're a financial advisor. Like you've even said on the show, like we are called to be the best that we can be.
Absolutely.
So like the magnanimous aspect of your life is to be the best husband, the best father, the best financial advisor that you can possibly be.
Yeah, I totally am agreeing with you.
Yeah, so like,
but I think
that is magnanimous.
I think people, one of the reasons why people don't ever talk about this is because I think it's confusing because of what you just read. Read it again, where it talks about, oh, he forgets the small things. He keeps his eyes on big things. He gets very little done because he's doing big things.
So
know
there's
what I
two
mean?
Different people. Like there's the visionaries and there's the implementers.
I want to totally approve of that. What this priestess said. And I also want to put it in layman's terms of that. What does that mean for your life? If you work in a mailroom, you know, I want to bring it down to that level to show that these two things are not mutually exclusive is what I'm, and that's what you're saying.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying. High five.
Okay. Whew. All right. Feels good there.
It's good to get a win.
Yeah. Chuck a W up there. Oh, yeah. So here's the thing that I think we struggle with is that the things that we've been given, that whatever your talents are, that you're naturally, there are natural talents that you have that everybody else in this room doesn't have. I have some that no one else in this room has, right? So, like, there's like this presupposition of, like, oh, well, I have this. And pride can get in the way because it's like, this thing comes naturally to me that does not come naturally to all of you guys. Why is it not coming naturally to you? Well, it must just be because I'm just so great.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's part of the problem with that can get in the way of magnanimity is that because we've been given these gifts that maybe others haven't been given, we can conflate that with things that I have that I can do versus, no, this is something that the Lord has, it's a gift that I've been given that I'm supposed to give back to everybody else.
And there's, of course, the other side of that coin where people might err on the other side, where it's like, oh, I shouldn't do this because...
So timid, being timid.
Yes, it's like, right? It's a false humility. The magnanimity walks the line of humility perfectly, where you rightly acknowledge the things that you have because you are better at some things than other people. In fact, you have a specific skill. Everybody has a specific skill. You're the only one in the world who has this exact talent, mm-hmm. right? God made you as to do him some very specific service. It's not on.
We're almost done.
Juan's going to give comments at the end of the, so make sure to go to the podcast here, what Juan has to say. So anyway, it does. It's the magnanimous man is not scared of his own success, right? He doesn't have false humility. He rightly recognizes his talents and seeks to use them for the glory of God, right? He doesn't try to say, "Oh no, I'm no better than anybody else."
Yeah, you know what it reminds me of is Archbishop Fulton Sheen.
Yes,
on an airplane, there's a very attractive woman. That went by and goes, you're very beautiful. And it was almost scandalizing that he said that. And she kind of confronted him about it and goes like, so what are you going to do with that beauty for God?
That's not the story about him I thought you were going to say. I'll tell the one I thought you were going to say on the podcast.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
So like, she was given that beauty as a gift, and it's like, okay, that is a gift that you've been given.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to use that gift?
Totally.
For greatness.
That's not a gift that I think that most people think about, like, oh, my beauty. Well, you know, because there are beautiful people out there.
It's presumption, though.
Yeah, but... Well, but I do think it's true that they don't think about that as a gift. You know, they might think about the other things that the other talents they have is like, mm-hmm. oh, these are gifts. But I think many people don't stop to think about, oh, my physical beauty is a gift that I need to use for the glory of God in whatever way.
Right.
The story I thought you were going to tell is when someone like was said to Fulton Sheen that like how good of a public speaker he was. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Yes, I am."
Well, that was true humility. Yeah, that was
but yeah, but and then he said, like, it would be sinful. It would be denying the gifts. I mean, obviously, God has given me the gift of public speaking.
Right.
For me to sit here and say, "Oh, I'm not a good," would be for to sit here and say to deny a gift that mm-hmm. God has given me. It's not, and you know, to me, that was a good also example of magnanimity because he was just rightly acknowledging. And using that gift in a great way.
I mean, so think about all like other world leaders in history who are fantastic public speakers, who have caused world like hunger, who have caused world wars,
mass murders.
Like it's not that they weren't given the gift of good public speaking.
Right. Yeah, I mean, or look at the demons. I mean, the demons chose and still choose to use their gifts in the most evil of ways.
Yeah.
One. What were you gonna say? I think so.
Good.
All right, so thank you for going to the trouble of getting me in.
I got you, bro.
But yeah. That was like 5 minutes of stalled time on the Catholic Man Show, which we normally do not do.
We actually stopped.
Yeah, which is so, probably a handful of times we've ever done that in the whole history of the Catholic Church.
And every time, it was like crucially important.
Yeah.
This was like, we had to stop. Mostly it's Adam going, wait, hang on. We've made some critical error.
And I may do this still after this has been said.
We're going to see what Juan has to say here.
Yeah, and then I may say like, wait, we have a critical error and no one may hear this. We'll see.
No, but... Last year, I went to this leadership training that my company sent me on. They were making the analogy of like the manager that's tried to improve in every single way of his managerial skills, right? Like just like you were talking about being predisposed to some virtues more than others. And what this guy was saying is like you're gonna be better off acknowledging the ways how you fall short, putting a finger on that, but then working on developing the things that you are naturally good towards and making them a superpower. Like that is your superpower, right? So when it comes to how I tie this up with the life of virtue is those virtues that you are come more natural to you. When you develop them and you keep growing in them, it's good to grow in all the virtues, right? But if you identify like, hey, this is the virtue that God gave me to be natural with, I'm going to be the best I can with it. And I think that is sometimes where the leap of magnanimity can come to you. Because it's like, once you have grown on that, once you have developed that, once you can use that to impact not only your family, right, but your community, and it's like, that comes a lot more natural to you, and sometimes that's what's required of you to act in these magnanimous ways.
I think that's an excellent point. That you know, yeah, we're not all gonna be. You know, it's like you know, when you played video games back in the day, and at the end of a level, you get to put so many points. You know, it's like oh, your character is gonna grow in strength or hit points or agility, right? And you decide where you want to put these. You know, it's not like the life of virtue that we are able to just make our virtue points completely even. Like, we're going to be equal across the board. Yeah. That's just not going to happen.
Are you kidding me? What an analogy.
Yeah. I think it works. I think it works.
Yeah, bro.
So,
all in.
But yeah, because
we're going to use that on our talk.
All right, good. It was really working for me to describe it to myself. So I'm glad you guys also thought it worked. Yeah, because Juan, I think that's such a good point that you do have some that's a superpower, and that is where you're going to be magnet. That's where your path to magnanimity lies.
Do you have?
I'm glad you said that.
Do you have a fear of putting all your talents, burying all your talents, putting the light underneath the bushel basket?
Yeah. When I don't experience that fear in my day-to-day life. I just find in my day-to-day life
you don't really experience a lot of like
I don't get stressed and I don't
about really yeah, anything.
I'm so busy from the morning I wake up from the time I wake up till I go to bed these days. It's just I think a lot of it's just the season of life that I'm in with young and many children. Mm. Many young children.
Mm-hmm.
That is just I'm too busy to be afraid of anything, you know, like just going. But when I have times of reflection, you know, like when I go on retreats, mm-hmm. you know, that's when I and it like really, which I have to be intentional about, otherwise it's not going to happen. That is something that I worry about. Not that I feel like I'm doing it. That I honestly feel like the things I do with the best I can. You know, there obviously I fall short sometimes, and you know, I acknowledge that. Do what,
bro? You do. You're killing it. Yeah.
But it's something that I worry about. Kind of in the future. Does that make any sense?
Well, so here's the thing is I look back on my 20s, like going in college and things like that, and like realize what a waste of opportunities that I had.
Oh yeah.
And then it's like, I wish that I would have been a more virtuous man to capitalize on the gifts that I've been given, not because I want to, you know, become a president or, you know, not for my own good, but like I was given some, like I've been given gifts that are like very easy to exercise that I just like threw away
mm-hmm.
that I like intentionally decided not to do. And then, so it's like, it's very easy for me.
So do you worry about those things?
I regret them.
You regret them. Yeah. Okay.
And so
maybe I misunderstood your question.
Well, the worry is it's like, it's very easy for me to look at 10 years ago and say like, oh, well, I regret that. I mm-hmm. wish that I would have done better. And it's like, well, okay, 10 years from now, I could be looking back at myself
yeah,
now and being like, golly, like I thought I was killing it now, you know, then, and I'm not. I like, you know, I wish that I would have done, you know, so knowledge and like the pursuit of prudence, the pursuit of wisdom,
mm-hmm.
Plays such a big role.
You know, honestly, I hope that in 10 years I say that. I'll be really disappointed in myself if 10 years from now I don't look back and say, "Man, I, you know, if I was then what I am now, I would have done better."
Mm-hmm.
Right? I really hope that, but at the same time I rest easy at the end of the day feeling like I really did.
There's a lot of nights you rested easy in college.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, there were,
but not from I wasn't resting easy from like my conscience.
Right. So it reminds me, there,
you know,
was
what I mean?
There was a good friar that that you and I both know. And he said, "I will be incredibly disappointed if I don't have perfect charity before I end my life." Before my life ends, not in my life. That's the difference.
Yes, before those two things are different. Yeah.
Before my life Grammar. Ends, and at first I thought like that is a little scandalous. Like
yeah, that's, it is.
There's a little presumption there. And then I pushed back on him. He said like, "Listen, I entered this order for this reason.
Uh-huh.
I have no other obligations to other like." I don't have a wife. I do not have children. Like my sole purpose in life is to grow in contemplation.
Yeah.
And he's like, "So if I don't have perfect charity before my life ends here on earth, like that's a disappointment." And so to me, that's a stretch.
He would consider it a failed life.
Yes.
Yeah,
and so like that's a stretch of soul. That's a stretch of mind. That's a stretch of heart. It's a stretch of person.
Yeah. I'm totally. You know what? I appreciate you saying that because when you said it, I was also kind of thinking, "That's come on, bro. Who do you think you are?"
Right.
But yes, you're right. That is the right attitude.
Yeah.
But, and then because that's magnanimity.
So then,
is what I mentioned. It's like magnanimity. You have to have it feels prideful at first,
right,
to say that like, oh, I'm going to have perfect charity. But we have to press into some of this chaos, mm-hmm, of this humility, pride, yeah, tension. And it's only when we really think about it and really ponder and wrestle with what appear to be, incompatibility, mm-hmm, that we realize, like, actually, no, I'm thinking about what is the good. I'm not thinking about
and
it correctly. Right, exactly. Because yes, we should, we would rightly say it's a failed life. You know, not like you're going to hell, but that you didn't achieve the perfect end for which God created you and put you on this planet.
So yeah, I was going to bring that example that you had with the charity and say, like, yeah, to his degree, charity was kind of like that disposition, that search that he has. That's kind of like his pursuit. That's his superpower. But sometimes when we say the stretch of the soul or the stretch of the heart can also be conflated with like an aspirational goal. Right.
Yeah, but ambition plays a goal here. Yeah.
But like, for example, I think between the three, and we know that I struggle with temperance a little bit. Only ever so slightly.
Well, me too.
Yeah. But
temperance is the hardest.
Yeah.
No, but, it's not.
But what I,
you don't think so?
What I'm trying to say is, like, there's a distinction between me saying, you know what, I'm gonna grow in temperance just a little bit and grow that growth in virtue. It's a gain, but it's not what I think magnanimity is about. I think it's about like achieving something great with those gifts that you are already that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm more likely to achieve magnanimity in other virtues, like, you know, hospitality or other things. Right? There's just like those ones that are a struggle for me. That doesn't mean that I'm not be called to grow. That doesn't mean that I'm not called to grow in those virtues, but it does give you something to look forward to. It's almost like you're not gonna be magnanimous in those virtues that you are not already quite familiar, quite the expert with, because I don't forget who it says that the magnanimity is almost like the excellence of all virtues, in the execution of them.
Aquinas says that.
Yeah. Aquinas.
It's very much like charity in that way. And charity, you know, his example where he's talking about perfect charity. Charity is like, okay, Juan, you're talking about specific virtues with, you know, maybe your temperament gives you better, but we're all called to perfect charity.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
charity
yes,
is sort absolutely. Of a, this, you, it's unique among the virtues in that, you know, so, I'm not called to fortitude the same way a soldier is called to fortitude.
Right.
You know, it's just not my, it's not in the vocational,
right,
you know.
So Juan, are you saying that the magnanimous aspect is when you are given, like, you make progress in the virtues that you're already like naturally predispositioned towards, or that the growth that you have in virtues in which that are struggles?
I think when you grow in virtues that you're struggling with, it's a path to magnanimity, but it's not the execution of magnanimity itself. Like, you're not quite living that virtue.
Oh, yeah. I would agree. Like, if you're lacking in a virtue and you grow in that virtue, I don't think that's objectively, like, I don't think that falls necessarily in that. This is strictly a magnanimous act, right? Mm-hmm. It's a holy act, and in as much as that, you know, it's like participating in some form of magnanimity, but it's not strictly magnanimous.
I also see it a little bit tied to prudence, in as much like prudence is more involved with like the discernment part of it and knowing when to do it. And I think that prudence has, you know, is tied to many virtues at the same time, because you're like writing when to execute all the virtues. I think the magnanimity is kind of like the completion of that. In a way that calls for that fulfills that stretch of the soul, that stretch of that longing for something justly great to God. It's like, God, your infinite, your mercy to us is so infinite. Let me give you something that is all I can give you right now, and it's going to be great. Mm-hmm. It is that longing to fill the gap between that chasm of infinite mercy and as far as I can jump.
Yeah, I do think that magnanimity exists when you know exactly where your place is, and you fill that place very, and you fill it as well as you can, right? That whether you're Therese, who called to be a little flower. Mm-hmm. I personally don't think she was that small of a flower. I think she was a pretty big flower, but she thought she was a little flower. So let's just say you are a little flower, but like you, the magnanimous, the virtue of magnanimity exists when you just are that little flower. You're exactly that little flower that God wants you to be, and God made you to be.
It's exercising the gifts fully that you've been given.
Right. And if you try to be any bigger, that's not magnanimous, right? Mm-hmm. That is where we will all find our maximum magnanimity, is when we just are
maximum magnanimity. Mm.
Yeah. It's a good word, right? Good. So that's what we have to do. So much, it all comes down to vocation. What am I called to? What is, you know, and it's not overly complicated, because, you know, it's as you go about your day, what is God calling you to do to that day? Mm-hmm. Just, it's so much of it is just opening your eyes and being willing to see the thing. Who does God put in front of you today? Love those people. Mm-hmm. You know, just keep doing that, and it'll happen. The rest will kind of take care of itself. I mean, it's hard to do, but that's what it is.
Do that.